Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Yesterday, as you will probably have heard, the European Medicines Agency announced a possible link between the AstraZeneca vaccine and very rare blood clotting in adults. Those receiving the vaccine here are warned that a small number of people who had recently received it had reported very rare, complicated clotting events, and the National Immunisation Advisory Committee will decide in the coming days if it needs to issue any further advice to government. At present, there is no further restriction on which age groups AstraZeneca will be offered to, but the UK has recommended that people under the age of 30 are to be offered an alternative to AstraZeneca if supplies allow. Joining me now in studio, Dr. Lorraine Nolan, Chief Executive of the Health Products Regulatory Authority, which participated in the review of this clotting issue with the EMA. Good morning to you, Dr. Nolan. Can you take us through, please, step by step, what exactly it is that the EMA has actually said?
Well, first of all, good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
And I suppose maybe the clearest way to answer your question is probably to take you back to, as you know, the EMA have been reviewing this issue of blood clotting over the past number of weeks, but to take you back to their statement they made on the 18th of March. And at that point, what they were saying in relation to a small number of cases of very rare and unusual blood clotting events, that they were at that point they were saying that they were not possible to rule out a link to the AstraZeneca vaccine in itself. So they committed to continue to review that issue. So what they have said yesterday, and that probably represents the conclusion of this initial stage of their review, is that a link to the vaccine is now considered plausible in the context of these rare events. Now, they are unusual and they are very rare, and I would say that. So what has happened yesterday is that the product information for the AstraZeneca vaccine will be updated to reflect these rare, possibly rare side effects and the unusual nature of these blood clotting events.
How possibly rare? What are the statistics on this, or the likelihood?
At the moment, we're not talking about an instance because we're still talking about numbers of around 26 or 86 cases in a total usage of 25 million of the vaccine in terms of the review that has been conducted by
and
the EMA.
And how many cases, similar cases, would you expect to see in the non-vaccinated population?
Well, again, that is something that will have been considered as part of the ongoing review by the EMA. And that's what they're looking at there is an observed versus an expected analysis of this. And I suppose what they're saying in when you look at the individuality of these case reports, you're possibly above what would be the expected in relation to this. But they need to continue to gather more evidence on this in view of the rarity of it. But also there's other issues to consider in terms of the characterization of the condition in itself. Clinically, you know, what is it? And what is the mechanism of action that gives rise to this condition? So the big question that's going to be on your listeners' mind this morning is, you know, is this absolutely categorically proven? And the answer to that at this stage is we do need to gather that more evidence.
OK, so more research needed. And in the absence of that research, then you have this balancing act to perform. Do we do more damage by not administering the vaccine than we do by temporarily halting it until we have gathered that research?
Absolutely. And this is always a process of weighing up benefits and risks. Absolutely.
And they have come down in favour of leaving things as they are.
Well, the EMA's position on this is that this continues to still be considered a very safe and a very effective vaccine, and that in overall terms that the benefit risk profile, and that's what we call it, remains positive, and that these events in terms of the numbers that are being observed, and you're talking about maybe typically around 1 in 200,000 was the figure that the EMA quoted yesterday, they are still considered to be very rare. And when we talk about, you know, risks, it's very easy to lose sight of what are the overwhelming benefits of vaccination. And that is what we have to keep in mind here.
So that accepted, absolutely. Can you tell me, though, is there a gender difference in associated with these risk levels?
And again, in terms of what the EMA have, you know, updated us on yesterday, at this point, given, I think, what are the very low number of cases, they haven't been able to pull out specific risk factors such as gender or age. Now, they are clear that in the cases that have been observed, there is a higher prevalence among women, and that there is a higher, you know, well, the numbers are higher among women and they are higher among younger women. But you have to remember that that also probably reflects the cohorts that are being largely vaccinated across Europe, because we do know that a lot of healthcare professionals, and we do have a higher number of women working in our healthcare professions, have been vaccinated. So it is likely that what we are seeing there as an increased rate may actually reflect the cohorts that have been vaccinated. And we can also see that among the cases that have been reported to us, they affect both men and women, because there are cases in men as well, and they do impact younger and older age groups as well.
So let me sum it up by saying that at the moment it's steady as she goes. We would do more harm by modifying or changing the vaccine rollout program than we would if we were to just leave things to go as they are. You don't obviously speak for the regulatory authorities in the UK, but can you understand how it is that they have arrived at this decision, their decision, to not administer the AstraZeneca vaccine to the under 30s?
Well, absolutely. And what you've described there in your introduction to that question, Philip, is very much so what the regulatory position is. Overall, the benefit risk profile of this vaccine remains positive. And that is the regulatory position in the UK as well. So there's really good consistency between what the European Medicines Agency have announced yesterday and also the regulatory agency in the UK, which is the MHRA. The position on the decision on vaccination of the under 30s in the UK was a decision that was actually announced by their Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, which is probably the equivalent to our National Immunisation Committee here in Ireland. And it is, you know, the case that in terms of making their decisions, national immunisation committees have to consider a range of different public health factors, not just the regulatory piece, because that feeds into it, but they also have to look at what the epidemiology of the disease in a particular country is at a given state and time, what the circulation levels of virus in their population are, also where they are in terms of their immunisation rollout, what their hospital and their healthcare capacity is to deal with the situation, and the availability of vaccines. So that is a much broader health, a public health decision.
So are you saying that the difference here could be they're further ahead in their vaccine rollout and they have more hospital beds in the UK?
Obviously, all of those factors will be taken into account, Philip, in terms of that decision. I mean, I cannot comment on the specifics of what the UK made what led to their decision-making process. I mean, certainly in terms of the coverage I have seen, you know, they have pointed to the fact that in terms of the under 30s, you know, probably less risk of severe COVID in that population.
You can't speak for the British authorities, but what you can try and do is reassure people here that imagine somebody in Dundalk this morning talking to a friend 11 miles north in Newry who's under the age of 30 and saying, oh, so you aren't going to be getting that vaccine, which is going to be offered to me. Now, obviously, anybody under the age of 30 is going to be a while before they're getting vaccinated anyway. But just go with the hypothetical that I'm sure people under or in that age cohort are saying to themselves, hang on a second, why is this not good enough north of the border, but it is south of the border?
Look, I can absolutely kind of understand why that question, you would ask me that question. But what I would say in relation to it, we do still come back to the fact that, you know, both the regulatory position from the EMA and the MHRA was very categorically in at this point, it's not possible to pull out specific risk factors for these rare blood clotting events based upon age in itself as a factor. We also have to look at what are the overwhelming benefits of this vaccine in itself in terms of, you know, what has come from the clinical trials. It provides excellent protection from the disease and it has a good safety profile. And then you look at the real world use of this, you know, that has borne out what we have seen in the clinical trials. But it's also showing us the very high levels of protection it gives in terms of severe disease and the prevention of hospitalization. So there are really clear benefits to this vaccine.
Okay. This is probably the most scrutinized vaccine program in the history of humankind. So does this sort of thing, this kind of modification of vaccine rollout programs happen more frequently than not?
What I would say to you, that probably represents the broader question on our role as a regulator, because as much as, you know, the role we have is about the authorization of medicines and vaccines, it's also about the safety monitoring of those medicines and vaccines when they go into real world use. And, you know, I think the public can be really reassured by the process of what is happening here. We were always open to the fact that when these vaccines went from a stage of being rolled out in clinical trials, where they have been tested and evaluated on tens of thousands of people, and you move to a situation where millions and millions of people are being vaccinated in a global pandemic, that it is possible that the real world use may show up very rare effects that it's not possible to see within a clinical trial setting. So we have always been open to that, and possibly we are working through that process of evaluating the information that is coming from.
Unfortunately for you, you're doing it in plain sight, which isn't very reassuring for us.
We are doing it in a very open and a very transparent way. And I hope that the public are more reassured by that the process here is working extremely effectively. And even if you look at the situation in Europe relative to the situation in the UK, this was picked up by the European monitoring system faster than it was picked up in the UK.
One of the most frequently asked questions now in the course of the last 24 hours has been, if I got a first jab of AstraZeneca, can I get a Pfizer or a Moderna as my second jab?
Well, what I would say to you is, look, we don't have any evidence to support that. I mean, all of these vaccines were evaluated with the exception of the Janssen vaccine, as two dose regimes. So that's the first thing to say. So that possibility of
two same dose regimes,
absolutely. So that possibility of mixing and matching particular vaccines, well, theoretically, that is a possible approach. And I mean, the EMA were very clear on this point yesterday. You know, they certainly haven't had a submission from any company to provide the evidence that would substantiate that that is a valid approach that could be taken.
I know you're going to be reluctant to give one size fits all advice, but there is a text here that I'll put to you and you can make of it what you will. What's the position for young adults under 30 who have got the first dose of AstraZeneca? Should they get the second dose? And I'm assuming there must be an underlying condition or something there if it's an under 30-year-old.
Well, whatever the circumstances in that case, I obviously couldn't comment on. But I mean, what I can say in relation to this, all of these, rare blood clotting events, they have been seen after the administration of the first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine. And that possibly reflects the fact that, you know, in Europe, we're certainly probably only now approaching the stage of second dosing. So we don't have the same level of experience with second dosing. And that remains the case in the UK. If I'm being honest, I have to say that if we have seen this issue with first dosing, we can't rule out the possibility that it could happen with second dosing. But while we're in a position of where we're saying that in overall terms, the benefits vastly outweigh the risks associated with this vaccine, and if it's perfectly okay to get a first dose, it's okay to get a second dose.
Because to put it in really raw, bald terms, COVID causes thrombosis in much higher numbers.
COVID in itself as a disease presents that risk of clotting as well too. So this is something that we do have to remember in considering what are the overall overwhelming benefits of this vaccine.
Okay. And can I ask you just before we go, what should people look out for here having received a vaccine? Are there any telltale signs, or again, are we talking about something that is so vanishingly rare it's not possible for you to offer any indications?
No, and that is one of the important things that has come from the update this week, is that we have more information on what to look out for. And I mean, important to say, of course, vaccines will cause side effects. The vast majority of those are mild to moderate, and we know about those. But in terms of specifically what to look out for, and it's important that people that are being vaccinated familiarise themselves with this, and they will be given information from their vaccinator who will talk them through the effects. So the things to look out for would be breathlessness, chest pain, and also swelling in the leg, for example, bruising, and particularly bruising beyond the site of vaccination, pinpoint bruising. Other things then would be kind of neurological type of effects, such as severe, persistent and worsening headache after vaccination.
But forgive me for being repetitive, the overall message here is not getting it will do more harm than getting
it. If you don't get vaccinated, you have zero protection from this very devastating disease.
Lorraine Nolan, Chief Executive of the Health Products Regulatory Authority, thank you very much for coming in to us this morning.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.